In section three of this seminar, we started discussing the tzimtzum, the lessening of the light, which, as we said before, it says that God lessened his light out of his spherical place and left it empty of the divine light, and he emanated a very thin line of light, meaning a finite light, which was finite in comparison to the previous infinite light. And from that finite light, all the worlds were created. Now, this finite light of the line, which is called the Kav Vachut, the line and thread of light, which comes into the created finite worlds, is finite only in regards to the infinite light which preceded it. But in comparison to us, there have to be further lessenings even in the line of light, the finite line of light which came into the world. Even in that, there have to be lesser and lesser light until it can come to our world. And in general, there's four general lessenings of the light. From the infinite light into the worlds of emanation, from the world of emanation into the world of creation, from the world of creation to the world of formation, and from the world of formation into the world of actualization, which our world is the end of the world of actualization, Asiya, which, in other words, the angels we described before, that the upper unity of the physical world comes out from the waste matter of those angels, those are the angels of the lowest of the worlds. And they get their life force from the emanations of the world of actualization, of Asiya. Now, in that world, there's 10 emanations, which we described before, the emanation of crown, wisdom, understanding, etc. Now, these 10 emanations came out from the lessening of the 10 emanations of the world of formation, all the way up to the original 10 emanations of the world of the emanations, the world of Atzilus, the highest of all the worlds, which come out from the infinite light. So that we say that in the infinite light, there's also 10 emanations. In the same way that we said that in the soul of the cat, there are all the various powers of the cat are included in the soul of the cat, even though really the soul of the cat is really a singular catness of the cat. But in it are included all his capabilities and all his powers, which will later come out into the body, in a Hiyuli fashion, meaning that in the same way as it is understood that within the soul of the cat, the power of movement does not mean that there's actual movements, there are actual physical movements, since it's a spiritual power of movement. So in the same way, upstairs, in the actual infinite light, the actual infinite light is really a total singularity, which is called a simple light, which is not made up of parts at all. In other words, that in the infinite light, there really are not 10 separate emanations. And yet it says that God is wise and not with a known wisdom. He's understanding and not with a known understanding. So all these various attributes are ascribed to him. In other words, everybody says that God is all wise and all powerful and all merciful and that he's infinitely loving, etc., etc., which these are the 10 attributes. The 10 attributes are ascribed to God, like, for instance, the attribute of conquest, that God is stronger than anything. There's nothing which he cannot conquer. But this is not to say that these attributes actually describe him. In the same way as the actual external movements of the cat, for instance, saying jumping, does not actually describe the actual inner cat what the soul of the cat is. Now, in order for these emanations to come out into the world and come down through level after level until finally they can be the emanations of a creature in the lowest world, like for instance in a person, there's also the power of wisdom, but it's a finite wisdom. Not only that, our power of wisdom really relates only to the world of action. In other words, basically most of our wisdom relates on how to do things in this world. In other words, when we say that somebody's very wise, we say we might use that in relation that he's very wise in his business dealings, for instance. It means he knows how to make money in a physical manner. Or that he's very wise when we say this, that if you have an emotional problem, we tell you, go to this man, he's very wise and he'll be able to help you. It means that his wisdom relates to human emotions. So it's a very limited type of wisdom. But the upper wisdom is a wisdom that includes everything in it. Not only that, the actual wisdom of God is really the wisdom of God himself, of knowing what he himself is, which is higher than the wisdom of the world. And within that wisdom is included all the particular wisdoms that will come out of it. And this is explained, for instance, like one of the attributes of godliness is the attribute of kindness. And it's understood like down here when a person is kind. So there's the kindness of the inner soul of the person from which his actual kindness comes from. There's the kindness in his mind that he thinks kind thoughts. There's the kindness in his heart that he feels the kindness and the compassion for the people. Then there's the kindness in his hand, means the kindness of action, where he finally does the actual kindness. Like for instance, if a poor person comes to him and says that he has no food, so he'll give him some food or he'll give him a few dollars to buy food with. So it's understood that the external kindness of action only comes out because he's a kind person. And the way that it goes as far as the chaining down of this quality of kindness means that the external kindness of helping the poor person comes from the emotional kindness, means the next level up. Because he feels in his heart the kindness for this person, and he feels the compassion, means that he actually feels the pain and sorrow of this person and feels sorry for him. And that's why he does the kindness, which if you will not feel the emotional kindness, then the physical kindness won't come out. Now, the emotional kindness comes from the fact that in his mind he has the mental kindness. Means that when he thinks about it, he thinks in kind terms, and these kind thoughts are what arouse the kind emotions. And this is because in the inner level of his mind, in the intuitive level, he has the intuition of kindness. Means that he sees in this poor person, in an intuitive manner, that what we say there, but for the grace of God, go you and I, that he feels that this is not just something that he's doing for the other person, but it's intellectually incumbent on him to do this thing. And it's not just a kindness, but that his mind is telling him that his own inner goodness is on the line. That if he doesn't do this kindness, he will not be able to look at himself in the mirror tomorrow. And this all comes from the inner kindness of his soul. That in his soul, he's a kind person. Because if he wasn't a kind person in his soul, then there would not be any of these other kindnesses. Now, the actual inner kindness in his soul does not actually include in it any particular act of kindness. It's a hiyuli, the same like we explained before, that a hiyuli is like fire coming out of a flint, that it only comes out when you put an effort of hitting the flint. In the same way, no kindness will come out unless he knows that there's a poor person who needs it. It means that the poor person has to come to him and ask for it, and then the kindness will come out according to the situation. Now, in the actual outer kindness that comes out, meaning when he helps this particular poor person, it has in it all the ten sefirot. Means that it has in it the wisdom for the kindness, the understanding for the kindness, the emotions for the kindness. Meaning what? That when the poor person comes to him, he first of all has to think about it. Means he first of all, it's an intellectual process. That he has to think, is this really a poor person, or is this just a cheater that's really not a poor person, he's just trying to steal this money? Like, you know, that some people do welfare fraud, for instance. So that we think that why should I give it to him, because this will take it away from a truly poor person, which I could give it to. So this is an intellectual process. Another type of intellectual process is that you might think that, wait a minute, he's telling me that he needs food, but if I give him the money, he's going to go out and buy a bottle of booze with it and get drunk, and instead of helping him, I'm really hurting him. So maybe it would be better if I would give him a food coupon so he could buy some food and he won't be able to buy any liquor. So this is the intellectual. And then, like we said, there's the emotion of the actual physical kindness that you feel for the person. And then there's the thought, speech, and action, means that he thinks in actual letters the thoughts which he thinks about this person. Then he talks to him. In other words, the poor person has to communicate with him what he needs, and he asks him, what do you need, and maybe offers him a kind word. And this is the speech of the kindness. And then there's the actual action of the kindness when he actually gives the poor person food or money or whatever. Now, since in the outer kindness, which we said that the outer kindness was all included in the inner kindness of his soul, that if he was not a kind person to start off with, he wouldn't be doing the outer kindness. That's why we know that certain people, we say, well, they're very kind people, and certain other people might be very cruel people. So when somebody needs something, we specifically look for the people that we know that they're kind people. The way we know they're kind people is because they always do kind deeds. So how do we know that it's not just that their deeds are kind? It's because they keep doing this, we realize that it comes from the inner soul of the person, and he keeps doing these kind deeds because inside he's truly kind. So that the outer kindness comes out from the inner kindness. Now, since the outer kindness comes out with ten sefirot, comes out with wisdom, understanding, with emotions, and with thought, speech, and action. So it means in the hiyuli kindness of the soul, how the quintessential kindness is in the essential soul, it's also made up from these things, but they're there in a hiyuli fashion. So we now understand that in the soul, all of these things are there, but not in a way that they're separate from the soul. They're all part and parcel of the inner kindness of the soul, which the inner kindness of the soul is really just part and parcel of the soul. And in the same way, upstairs in the infinite light, the various qualities which came out of him included everything which will come out later, in the same way that it's understood that in the actual kindness of the person, according to the kindness of the soul, will come out all the various acts of kindness. Now, the actual lessening of the light started before the actual lessening in what is called the glif glifu. And this glif glifu refers to the first statement of the Zohar, which is one of the central Kabbalistic books, And it says like this, Bereish Hurman Adamalka Glif Glifu Bitihiru Ilah. In the beginning of the rule of the king, he engraved an engraving in the upper purity, which it explains in Kabbalah, the engraving which he engraved was an engraving of letters. Means in the upper singular infinite light, he engraved an engraving of letters which was called Ana Emloch, I will rule over the world. I will be the king of the world. Now this engraving, it explains in Kabbalah, was like an estimation of everything which will come out afterwards into the line of light which will come into the empty place of the world. Which means the entire line of light from the beginning to the end, means all the way from the light, how it comes out very big in the upper worlds of emanation, all the way down to our world where it comes down in a very, very small, small fashion, that's called the line of light. From the beginning to the end of the line was all already estimated before the lessening of the light. And the allegory on that, we can go back to our cat. Which, in a cat, as we said, the power of movement is included within the soul of the cat. So let's take a particular movement of a cat, which a cat likes to jump on mice and eat them. So for instance, if a cat sees a mouse, then if you look at the cat, you'll see that he's crouching, and he's not moving, and he's getting ready for the jump. Now, even though he didn't make any single movement yet, and the entire movement of this jump, which he's going to jump, is still totally included inside of himself. However, he already estimated the entire jump. He knows exactly how much power his legs are going to use and exactly what movement he's going to make from the beginning of the jump till the end of the jump. So that he has an estimation of the entire jump in his mind. Not only that, in this estimation of the jump, the end of the jump comes up before the beginning of the jump. Means the end of the jump is the fact that he can already taste the mouse. And that's why he's making the jump. That's the whole reason he's making the jump, is for the end of the jump. So over here also, the estimation of the world means that God estimated everything that will come out in the line of light, which is likened to the jump of the cat, which in other words, the jump is just a very thin line of movement which came out of all the various movements that the cat could have made. So in the same way, this particular line of light came out this particular world how God wanted to make it. And it did not come out in a different way, it came out exactly in this way. And why did he make this world? Specifically for the end of the world, meaning in order to create people. So, in other words, the lowest part of the world, the end of the world, is what came up in the estimation before even the beginning of the estimation, means before even the higher worlds, which were only made in order to be intermediaries to come out with a final world. And in the same way, in the allegory of the person giving money to a poor person, which that was already estimated inside of him before he actually did it. It means he already estimated how much he's going to give him before he actually gave him. And the entire line of this particular action was already estimated in the soul before it came even into the mind. So basically, there's two levels here. There's the level of the estimation of what the line will be. Now, this estimation is still in the infinite light before it was lessened. Then there's the actual line of light which will come out of it, which is a whole different thing, because the same thing like in the cat, the estimation within the cat, within the soul of the cat, is spiritual. It's not, there's no actual movements in the estimation. no physical movements in that estimation. While the actual jump is a physical movement, which is a totally different thing, which doesn't compare to the spiritual jump, how the cat estimated inside of himself. In the same way, it's to be understood that the thin line of light which came out is not really just the original infinite light lessened into a finite light. Because basically, the original infinite light is intrinsically infinite. It's not infinite because it's made up of so much so that you can take a little piece out of it. It's really one singular unity which is not made up of parts at all. So the tzimtzum, the lessening of the light, had to be a qualitative lessening also, not just a quantitative lessening, which means in the same way like in the cat, there's a lessening from a spiritual estimation to a physical jump. In the same way, here the lessening is from the infinite light of God into the finite lights of the world. This is explained in Kabbalah by what is called the Tzimtzum or Shimum, that there was a lessening of the light and there was left over an impression from that light. Which, what does it mean, an impression? One explanation basically what an impression means is like in the detective movies, when they see a pad of paper next to the telephone and the crook wrote the number of the telephone on the pad, and then he tore off the paper with the number. But on the paper behind it, even though the actual number is not written down there, he took the writing that he wrote, but there was an impression left over. And in the impression, you can see the whole original number. So it says that when God removed the infinite light and left an empty place, there was left an impression of the original light. And this impression is called the Rishimu. Now, there's various allegories to explain what is the Tzimtzum, what is the lessening of the light, and what is the Rishimu, what is the impression which was left over. Which in general, these allegories is like we said before, that like a teacher who is teaching a student. When a teacher is teaching a student, so like we said before, a big mathematician who wants to teach little kids mathematics has to start off with a very lessened intellect of mathematics, that he has to teach them one apple plus one apple is two apples. But it's even more than that. In other words, that in the Tzimtzum, there is actually an impression of the whole original light that was before it. And like, what is an example of that is like, for instance, the study of Kabbalah. That basically over here, right now, we are studying basically all kinds of subject matters which relate really to the physical world. We're talking about cats, we're talking about teachers, we're talking about the angels, we're talking about the cycles of the world, which all of these are external facets of things which we can understand. And it's understood, of course, that it's just an allegory, that when we say that the cat, and then we liken it to how it is upstairs in the infinite light, it's understood that the infinite light is not really a cat. It's something much, much higher than that. And yet, in the very lessened intellectual explanation, which is just an explanation of a cat, is included all the details in a very lessened, compact way of how things are upstairs. And this is called a mashal, an allegory. So that in the external allegory, everything is included. Now, why did it have to be brought out into an allegory? Because the students would not be able to receive the original light how it was before it was allegorized. In other words, if we would try to just explain how it was in the light without trying to put it in terms which we understand, so we wouldn't be able to understand it. And yet, within these mashals, within these allegories, is the whole length of the original life. Now, the entire length and width of the inner intellect of Kabbalah is included in this very simple allegory of a cat. In a very lessened way, yet still the entire length and width and depth of it is included, but not in the original way. It's included in a way that is just a reshimu of it. It's just an impression of it, and not the actual original thing, because obviously we're only talking here about a cat. So that from a fantastically long, long intellect, we bring it into a short intellect. Now, in general, in all kinds of teaching, this is the way it is, that the intellect has to be shortened, and it also has to be cut up into little pieces, so that, for instance, like we said with the kids, that the teacher teaches them mathematics, so first he teaches them only one little piece of mathematics, which is addition. Then he teaches them another little piece, which is subtraction. Then he teaches them another little piece, which is multiplication, and then division, and then fractions, etc., etc. Now, the reason for teaching them all these little pieces, there's basically two reasons for it. Number one, that if you were trying to just teach them the inner theory of mathematics, they would not be able to grasp it. So therefore, you have to lessen the intellect into something that they would understand. The second reason is that not only do you want them to receive the lessened intellect of 1 plus 1 is 2, but you understand that in the first grade they're going to learn 1 plus 1 is 2, in the second grade they're going to learn already multiplication, by the third grade they're already learning division and then fractions. So then finally when they reach college they'll be able to learn calculus and mathematical theory and all the things, and finally they could become a professor of mathematics themselves. Meaning they'll be able to learn the original full intellect, which was lessened in order to teach them 1 plus 1 is 2. So here, it also means that why did God lessen the infinite light? For two reasons. One, because we could only receive the lessened light. But besides that, through receiving the lessened light, we slowly grow so that we can receive a light which is not so lessened, and then a greater and greater light, so that finally, at the coming of Mashiach, of the Messiah, we will be able to receive the whole original light of God, how it was before the lessening.